Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the best and greatest beginning of the new season of Nerdy Notions. I am the one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan. And today I'm joined by one of my very good friends, the incredible and equally sarcastic Caitlin Moore.
Hello there, folks. Glad to join, and I'm glad for my very first episode.
I'm so psyched because we have been talking about this for far too long. It kept getting sidetracked between stuff I was doing with thesis work and grad school and then you and work and all of these things culminating. But today I thought we would start things off. Well, actually, I take that back. This was your idea.
Unfortunately, yes, it was.
Because we were thinking of like, oh, maybe we should start with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. And then that plan didn't really go forward. And so Caitlin realized that we left off having not recorded Hawkeye in season two because we'd gone into the X-Men films and everything. And so Caitlin had the great idea of like, why don't we start with the Black Widow movie? Because the Black Widow movie does lead us into Hawkeye and technically also Captain America Winter Soldier. But we've already talked, Mike and I covered that last time. So, Caitlin, did we have to watch this movie?
I mean, it was a movie. There was pictures on the screen as I watched it, but, yeah, I guess we kind of did. It's just, it's a very, 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 very average movie.
Yeah, and honestly, that's pretty sad, because everybody kept talking about and demanding and whining and kvetching to everybody and their mother. They're like, oh my god, we need a Black Widow movie, we need a Black Widow movie, and you got one.
I mean, it is a Black Widow movie by technicality in that there are Black Widows in it, but it's not Natasha's movie. And I think that's what people really wanted. But that's not what we got here. Rather, it is another origin story, this time for her younger sister. And we really, she's the one who carries this movie, like, truly.
Yeah. I think for a lot of us, first, I'm going to preface this. I didn't want a Black Widow movie. I didn't care. Because to me, Black Widow wasn't a character. Like, yeah, there was stuff that was interesting about her. But I thought if you were going to do a movie, that it was going to have, you know, like maybe Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. And you're going to make some of the gaps of, or tackle some of the things that, like, we know about Black Widow and build the movie around that as, like, an origin story or as, like, a, here's how we got to where she is now. Instead, we get this really bizarre movie that does give us a little bit of backstory, but we don't really see most of it. And it's actually set after Civil War, or right in between Civil War, right?
I mean, they chose the weirdest time to set this movie. Like, in all honesty. And I agree with you. I never wanted a Black Widow movie either. But if we were going to get one, it better have been a damn spy thriller. And that's not what this is. This is a pure Marvel action movie at its most average of Marvel action movies. So, they had an interesting concept going. I do think they had some very good scenes in this movie. But overall, like, it was just a slog to get through.
Okay, so on that lovely, charming note, let's talk about the opening scene of this movie, because we don't actually open up in the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union actually doesn't exist. We open in 1995, where we see a young girl with, like, dyed hair on her bicycle, right? And she's, like, riding her bicycle in freaking Ohio. And, you know, she runs into her little sister, and then, like, we meet the mom, and then we meet the dad. And this entire, like, first scene makes it seem like this is just some kind of average family. And then the dad comes home, and we have this whole mess where I guess he stole something, and then they run to Cuba. And this is the kind of the opening sequence of us finding out that the little girl, blonde girl, the little sister is actually Yelena. and that the older girl is actually Natasha. So what did you think of, before we get into the whole child human trafficking thing that happens during the opening credits, what did you think of this opening sequence?
Honestly, I actually liked the opening sequence. I think it was unique enough to kind of bring us in, and you were kind of like, you knew who the older kid was. Like, there was no massive surprise here that was going to be Natasha. But at least it was an interesting concept. And honestly, it introduces the best part of this movie, which is the dad character, like, early on. But, like,
played by David Harbour, yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on. Like, best character in this entire movie.
So I will say I enjoyed this opening sequence. And one of the reasons I really enjoyed it is because of the young girl that plays Natasha.
Mm.
Not only does she deliver a really good performance, like, you can feel the pain and raw emotion, her Russian is on point. So the actress, her name is Ever Gabo Anderson. She's the daughter of Mila Jovovich, and her father is the director, Paul Anderson. And so Mila Jovovich, I think, is from Ukraine, if I remember correctly. And so I think, you know, it obviously explains why her Russian is so good. And I really enjoyed it. I think she delivered a really good performance. And, like, the fear, and again, like, I'm always a sucker when actors, no matter what, pronounce Russian correctly, because as we move forward in this movie, this will be the last time that happens.
Yeah, pretty much that's the only time that happens. And it's sad when the child actors are some of the best actors in the entire movie.
It's decently acted overall. I think it's just certain Russian words are easier than others. So, like, Florence Pugh, as we get through the rest of the film, there are moments where her Russian is pretty decent. Like, when mm-hmm. when her and Natasha quit fighting later and she says, Galadna, which for some reason is translated to no shit or something like that, which became a running joke in my with my parents. Or when she says, like, I think there's another scene where, like, after they rescue our Soviet, not Captain America, and she's like, okay, хорошо, can we move on, kind of a thing. And that was really good. But when she tried to explain the whole neurological manipulation thing, it was a little jumbled. So she did a really good job. Scarlett Johansson's Russian, not great. And then David Harbour's was even worse. Sorry, David Harbour, you are fantastic, but no.
Yeah, so if you're expecting fluent Russian in this movie, you're not going to get it. But honestly, that opening, and going back to the opening, like, it is a very good scene. I really think it captures, like, a lot of, like, emotion and essence and the kind of the theme of the movie, which is reconnecting and rebinding as family. I liked it up until the point where they got into the damn plane and then my mind just broke. But that's just me.
So I followed it and I'm like, oh, they're going to Cuba. And then I was like, wait a minute, if this is Natasha, how is this a family? And then the scene where, like, Natasha is saying, Ya budu strelet, I'm going to shoot. And, you know, they get, like, injected with the sleepy juice. And I was like, oh, we're going to do that. And then we transition into that opening sequence that looks like something out of an episode of SVU. Like, it's just, it's so horrific. And then we see that Natasha and Yelena are also on this.
If they carried that theme throughout the rest of the movie, it would have been a whole lot stronger, but a whole lot darker also. And that's kind of what I wanted. Because you're right, it does look like it just came out of an SVU episode. But that's what I feel like the Black Widow program should be.
Yeah, given everything we know about the Black Widow program, you know, but we'll get more into it. But let's talk about right after the opening sequence, we find Natasha Romanoff in 2016, a year that, you know, everybody totally loved. Nothing weird or unfortunate happened in 2016, right?
It was normal. Nothing bad happened.
No big deal. But in 2016, which is, I guess, when Civil War happened, we find that Natasha is on the run. And this is, like, right after the incredible airport fight in Germany, but before Cap shows up to rescue everybody in the raft. So Natasha escapes and makes her way to Norway, where she meets up with this guy named Rick Mason. And he's, I guess, her like supplier dude.
Do they actually say his name in the movie?
I don't think they do.
I think that's the first time I've heard his actual name, because I think he goes nameless throughout the entire movie.
I think they call him Mason at one point, I want to say. But so we quickly flash to Yelena, who is like in, I don't know, Morocco or somewhere.
I think, yeah, it is Morocco, I believe. And honestly, that was a decent action scene overall. Like, I liked where they were going with it. I like her introduction. I think it really captures that she's on equal footing with Natasha, which was my biggest concern with introducing her as a kind of younger sister side character thing.
Yeah, it doesn't try to make her into a sidekick.
Yeah.
It definitely sets it up. So the plot, for those that somehow missed this movie, is basically the widows are after this woman who I guess is a former widow, and she's carrying this briefcase, and Yelena goes after her and they fight, and Yelena manages to kill her. But right before she dies, or right around the fight, she sprays something at Yelena, and Yelena sort of wakes up, and the first thing she does is she takes out some kind of tracking microchip and she runs away.
So a key part of this plot is that in this part of the timeline, all the Black Widows are being mind controlled to be forced to do all the things that they're doing.
By the Red Room.
But, yeah.
Which, okay, hold on a second. I gotta go back here for a minute. So Natasha Romanoff and the Red Room was a KGB program.
Yes.
Yay. Natasha was born in 1984.
Yes.
Which is, I think, also when Scarlett Johansson was born.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that in 1995, she's like 11, maybe 10, depending on what time of year she was born versus when her birthday is. So she was technically only a Soviet, you know, a Soviet KGB spy for like the first 5 years of her life.
Don't think about timeline too much, but yeah, pretty much. So she was a very good KGB spy for the first 5 years.
I feel like, I'm going to put this out now, but I feel like a lot of the problems that we're going to discuss in this movie can be solved by Marvel doing two things. One, actually really doing one thing, which is explain that the whatever shenanigans they did in the Red Room also included some kind of de-aging capability, because you don't want to keep replacing widows. But I guess then that wouldn't have been as cool as this, all of the ridiculousness we get later. So like, if you establish that Natasha is older than she looks, then she could have been born in the 60s and still look like she's 30, because that's literally how it is in the comics. Unless it's been retconned and I haven't noticed.
I don't think it has, but who knows at this point.
Yeah, really though. So, okay. So we know that, I guess Yelena had sent the antidote to Natasha, but it was part of this like junk material that Mason drops off from the Budapest safe house. And there was a cute moment between Natasha and Mason where she's like, it's Budapest. And he's like, Budapest. And it was kind of cute. Right. So then Natasha, her generator is supposed to go for like a certain amount of hours, but she doesn't. This is not the Hanukkah generator from The Ghost and Molly Magee, okay? This is just a bad generator. So she's loading up the car, and she'd previously dropped all of the stuff from the safe house, including this, like, box of vials in the car. And she's driving, and I was like, something's about to happen, isn't it? And then her car gets blown up. And we see that the person after her is this character called Taskmaster.
Yay, Taskmaster. I actually like Taskmaster a lot as a character. This was not my favorite portrayal of Taskmaster.
When did you... So we're going to plot twist, which is the most predictable plot twist. Just to kind of backstory, we know that General Dracoff was the guy in charge of the Widow Program and the Red Room, right? We know that in order to prove her loyalty to S.H.I.E.L.D., Natasha had to kill Dracoff. In the bomb in Budapest, it's actually Dracoff is killed with his daughter Antonia. And this is repeated several times over the course of the movie, to the point where like it's not even foreshadowing anymore. It's just like, you know, hey, this is foreshadowing. Hey, this is foreshadowing. It's like a giant billboard, like Dracoff's daughter is important.
So if you didn't figure it out, Dracoff's daughter is Taskmaster.
Which I heard rumors, but I remember watching it in the theater. I don't think I watched this with you.
I don't think so either. I think this is one of the few that we didn't watch together.
For those that are just tuning in, so Caitlin and I have kind of become each other's Marvel buddies. So when we live in the same vicinity, we will go and, you know, see the Marvel movies together, essentially. We have like a whole tradition. So I remember watching the scene with Natasha and Taskmaster, and Taskmaster like doing all these Captain America moves and Black Widow moves. And then something in the way that the Taskmaster approached the vehicle, I went, oh my God, Taskmaster's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I thought, maybe because I had heard rumors of somebody saying that and I just like remembered it in that moment, but something in me, and I was like, am I right? And then every time they mentioned Dracoff's daughter, I was like, oh, I'm definitely right.
I mean, the entire point that they invented of Dracoff and that entire thing was just to kind of solve the plot hole about why didn't Natasha not destroy the Red Room when she became an Avenger? And it's because she already thought she did.
Yeah, but at the same time, the fact that the Red Room still exists and somehow operates without the existence of the Russian government is laughable to me. And at the time of this recording, this is, you know, February of 2023. So the war in Ukraine has been going on for almost a year at this point. And so the Russia that I know, I find it hilarious that not only does the Red Room exist still, but that it somehow operates independently with only Dracoff running the whole thing.
Well, that's my other problem with this. And this is like, the Red Room's older than Dracoff, right? If you actually watch Agent Carter, for all five of us that actually watched that entire show,
maybe like 10.
The Red Room, or the predecessor to the Red Room, actually plays a big part in that show. Because one of the main characters, who actually serves as one of the villains in season one and later shows up in season two, actually also comes from like the predecessor of the Black Widow program. So there's a lot of history there, at least in the MCU, that they kind of just dumped in for the sake of making it Dracoff's program.
Yeah, this is the... And, like, Dracoff was definitely older by, because I, you know, in the opening sequence, we see pictures of him with, like, different politicians and in places and everything. But I don't know. The entire concept of the Black Widow, the Red Room, to me, feels very been there, done that.
A little bit, yeah.
This is, like, Bucky Barnes and Hydra. This is, you know, the base is located super high up in the sky and has to be brought down. I'm like, this is literally the plot of the first Avengers movie. Or at least part of it, right? Because you had the helicarrier, and the helicarrier had to be, well, it had to be saved from being brought down. So it just felt like a lot of these elements were very much like, we've seen this before. And especially the whole Taskmaster, Dracoff's daughter, Bucky Barnes, you know, Winter Soldier thing. So, okay. Natasha gets blown up, has the crap beaten out of her, and then somehow casually makes her way to Budapest and is like, totes fine.
You know, she just walks it off, you know, like she's invulnerable at this point. So like she will survive this entire movie with stuff that should have killed her completely. But we just have to take that all with a grain of salt because we all know she's just the ultimate spy master.
Yeah, so Natasha does recover. She does get the vials. She doesn't let Taskmaster have them. And then so she goes to Budapest to find whoever sent her the vials, and she finds Yelena, and they have this little fight where it's very clear that they are evenly matched. And then I think Taskmaster shows up with two widows. And there's a scene where they kind of scale like a little tower or something in order to like escape.
Yeah.
And then Natasha falls and her body hits like several metal like tubes.
Yeah, that I think is almost the worst of this, her invulnerability powers. Like it's absolutely the worst in the very last like fight of the movie with Taskmaster, but here it's like pretty bad. Like she should be dead. She's not Captain America here, unless that would have been amazing. If we followed the comics, that would have been amazing. But we didn't. So she should be dead.
And to the surprise of absolutely no one, they do link this back to Captain America Winter Soldier in the fact that the vials, or in the entire Red Room program, was actually what David Harbour's character stole from a Hydra facility in Ohio.
So that's why they escaped Ohio in the first place, was because they burned down this Hydra facility. So they had to run to Cuba, and that's where they.
I'm sorry, I refuse to believe that Hydra didn't have agents in Cuba. Like, there's no
Well,
way.
it's of course they did, but we're going to ignore that fact because plot convenience. So that's when Natasha and her sister are separated from their fake parents, and they haven't seen them for like however long.
Yep. So after all of this fighting, and escaping, one of the widows does die, and she like there's a fail save. So because she was like her leg was broken, there's like her like arm gauntlet like beam. She's like, no, I don't want to do this. And then she sort of kills herself, basically. But it's, we know she's we find out later that it's Dracoff controlling the widows. And so they Natasha and Yelena have this like they start to bond. They started catching up. Yelena is such a joy to watch. Like Florence Pugh delivers such a great performance. Let's talk a little bit about how Yelena's characterized here. What did you think of her as a? I mean, you talked a little bit in our opening about how she was kind of she was introduced with equal footing to Natasha. She's a very fun character. So what did you think of her and of Florence Pugh's performance?
I think it's great. In all honesty, I think she's actually better characterized than Scarlett Johansson and Natasha ever has been. Because my biggest problem with Black Widow throughout this entire saga is that her personality seems to change with every single movie that she's in. Like, there is never any consistency with her and her performance. And then we get Yelena, and she has a different kind of, like, they made her personality different enough from Natasha that she's unique in her own way. And so far, it has stayed consistent through what we have seen her in.
Which is Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Yeah, and
I
probably.
would say part of the. So I don't necessarily hate the idea that Natasha's personality changes because Natasha is a character that adapts, right? So just because she's like this master infiltrator spy, whereas like the Black Widow program, the Red Room, is shown to be very like assassin based, whereas like Black Widow was introduced as a spy with like cool gadgets, basically. So it's like I can understand. I think I see where you're coming from, but I think there's a few little subtleties that we see throughout this movie that do sort of help. But then again, maybe it's like, but I see, I definitely don't disagree with you completely on that. I do think she's compared to Yelena, there is like a little bit of a lack of personality almost.
So, like, because if we go all the way back, she was first introduced in Iron Man 2 as basically a side character with zero personality, other than she's very good at fighting other people. And then she really developed well in Winter Soldier. And that's honestly where I think she was her best outside of Infinity War. And then I think her personality takes a completely different turn in Age of Ultron to some extent.
So it's a lot of back and forth. And some of it could also be chucked to the kind of see, like I think they talked about in Winter Soldier, they brought up the idea that Natasha can be whoever a person needs them to be. So maybe that plays into it. But the problem is that we're guessing here. That's a cutesy headcanon, but it's not necessarily true. It's just inconsistent directors.
Yeah.
So I also really loved Yelena. I mentioned that earlier, that she's just very delightful. She has a very fun personality. She's very blunt.
Incredibly
And I
so.
love that about her. So Yelena, and one of the key moments for me is that they really establish how Natasha and Yelena view that entire fake family. So for Natasha, she thought that her real parents abandoned her and she's, moved on from the Red Room essentially. For Yelena, she sort of clung to that family because I guess the Red Room even destroyed her birth certificate. Like, geez, talk about overkill. And she thought that she creates this ideal family based off of this fake family. And Natasha doesn't really get it at first, but then she sort of comes to embrace it, right?
Yeah, and that calls back to what I think is actually one of the best scenes in the movie that we'll get to soon. But Yelena genuinely didn't know that this was a fake family. She actually believed that this was real because no one actually told her otherwise because she was so young. And that, and it, her story really actually tugs at your heartstrings. And that's why she's the real part of this movie.
No, definitely. She's like... With Natasha, like, we've had a couple of discussions of trauma, but we don't really... But again, like, Natasha has moved on from all of that. And that's very evident. But Yelena's still in it. And so it's interesting to see her journey. I love that scene after they steal that guy's car, after they escape from Taskmaster again. And Yelena's talking about her little vest that she bought for herself and the little pockets. And I'm like, she's just so proud of this vest. Let her love this vest. So they talk to Mason, and I guess they decide they need to go to the Red Room and stop them. But they don't know where the Red Room is. No one does. The widows are sort of, like, deactivated before they're brought to the Red Room. So Natasha has the bright idea that they're going to go after our Red Guardian, played by David Harbour, whose name in the movie is Alexei Shostakov. He's a Soviet super soldier, and we see him in the totally not Soviet gulag.
Yeah, absolutely not. That's totally not what this is at all, because, you know, the Soviet Union doesn't exist. But, yeah, no.
I mean, it's probably not far off from what a Russian prison actually looks like these days in Siberia. I'm just saying.
I mean, probably not. So, just to give perspective, he's the supposed, like, fake father of the two of them. So that's, and he was a partner to Dracov. And long story short, he ended up getting thrown in jail.
Because Dracov has friends, guys.
Like, yeah, totally. You know, all the friends. And he throws his friends in jail, you know, like traditional Soviet Union Russians back in the heyday. So he's been in prison since Cuba, essentially.
Yeah, that's a long time to be in prison. But, like, this is where the timeline on the Soviet-Russian side of things, as a historian and someone who was born there, makes absolutely no sense to me. And I'm also very confused by this running joke about the Red Guardian versus Captain America. Does this imply that there was, in fact, like, in the comics, there was another Captain America in between Steve Rogers going into the ice and Steve Rogers coming back from the ice?
Well, that's actually a very good question, because I don't know if that was confirmed or not in the Captain America and Winter Soldier series, because there was another guy with...
Isaiah.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes it so much better. And worse at the same time. But then the timing doesn't quite match up, though.
No, but this is the MCU, so they probably fudged it a little bit.
I already have a headache, and we haven't even gotten to King the Conqueror and time travel. Well, more time travel.
So it would have been hilarious if he wasn't actually talking about Steve Rogers this entire time, but another Captain America between the two. But I highly doubt that's the case. I think this was just a bad running joke throughout the entire, like, movie. But what can you do?
I find it so funny that, you know, in the comics, there have been so many people that are Captain America. It wasn't, even, like, before Bucky and Sam took on the mantle, right? You had Isaiah, a couple, like, one other person in between whose name escapes me. U.S. Agent wore the mantle, though nobody really wanted him to for 2 seconds. And then you had Bucky, and then you have Sam, and then you have Eli Bradley in the future, which will happen, I hope. But, so this is, like, a weird running joke. But they send some cookies, which, of course, the guards eat, because Russian guards are just as big jerks as the rest of the Russian government. But he does get this, like, dorky-looking Red Guardian action figure that pops, as soon as he pulls a string, right? Mm-hmm. The head pops off, and there's an earpiece. And so, in what is, I think, a very ridiculous and unnecessary rescue, in the sense that, why did it have to be this big and blunt? Like, did Natasha supposed to be a spy?
Yeah, no, this is where I wish this movie was a spy thriller, because this would have made this scene so much better. Rather than riding into the prison in a really obvious helicopter, They could have done some actual spy nonsense and breaking him out that way. And this leads to my other pro. I mean, he is still, in my mind, the best part of this movie because he gets to be ridiculously funny. But they, I felt like they also made him very underpowered for what he's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. He's supposed to have superpowers.
Yeah, he's supposed to be the equivalent of, like, Captain America, right? So he's supposed to have the super soldier serum, but they made him the comic relief of the movie, essentially.
But
so
what's interesting in all of that is there are some interesting seeds planted. There's a couple. So, like, there, the first time we see David Harbour's character, he's talking about this alleged fight he had with Captain America, which, like, 10-10 didn't happen. But he's like having an arm wrestling contest, which is supposed to imply that he has superpowers. And one of the last people that sits down is a character he describes as Ursa, the bear. Ursa Major is another Soviet super soldier. So what, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they just toss them all into prison and hope for the best?
I mean, it's also like breaks the plot of a couple of other movies that the Soviet Union actually managed to create a super soldier.
There's another reference later. I wrote it down. I'm going to try to find it that I laughed really, really hard. And I don't remember what it was, but it was a reference to another, it was a reference to another Russian or Soviet character who was, I think, an enemy of Wolverine, actually. What was it? I will look through my notes. But yeah, I don't get, like, it's not like you can't fake some documents and pretend to be some, like, you know, Russian government official from Moscow, because everybody knows what the Russian Duma looks like.
Yeah, so they end up breaking him out. They cause an avalanche, and then it's a decent action scene. It drags a little bit, but eventually they get him in the helicopter. They have the family reunion. It doesn't go very well. And it ends up with this joke of them crashing the helicopter into the middle of nowhere.
Yep. And then as they're walking away, the guardian starts to ask Natasha, no, like, hey, how have you been? I haven't seen you in 30 years. She's like, so does he talk about me? Also, David Harbour's Russian, exists when it needs to and then doesn't exist at other times. It was kind of funny to watch. So let's see. So I actually have a note here about the escape from the gulag. I said it might be the most unrealistic Marvel movie ever. Oh, and when they're on the helicopter, they kind of talk about the red room hysterectomy. Because Alexei says something stupid about, like, oh, are you on your period or something? And she's like, no, I don't have those. I don't have a uterus. Because, you know, they do the thing and they take the thing. I laughed so hard. I think that might be the funniest scene in the entire movie. And he's like, okay, I got it. You don't have to talk about it. She's like, I didn't even get to the fallopian tubes.
Yeah. So that's, for me, the humor of this movie is hit and miss. Yeah. Like, I think there's some really, really funny moments and other moments that I'm just rolling my eyes and I'm like, what are you trying to do here? But anything between, like, Yelena and her father figure, I believe they call him Alexei throughout the entire movie, is great. They have the best scene in the movie, in my opinion, later on. But we'll get to that. And it's just, you could tell that she was a daddy's girl. Yeah. And I love that gimmick.
Yeah, it's also, like, really, like, hard, especially, like, in a little bit later when they're talking and they're arguing and Natasha says, like, none of this was real. And Yelena actually, like, breaks, like, she's trying to hold it together, but you can see how affected she is because this is essentially the only family she's ever known, even if it was fabricated.
Yeah, so that gets into kind of what happens after they crash the helicopter and they go visit the fake mom's pig farm. What's her name? Malina.
Yeah, so they go see Malina, and she explains, this is where we find out some backstory because she's here mostly for exposition. And she explains that what they stole from the Red Room or from the United States was actually from Hydra. And basically she has these pigs and it's clear that she's testing these like mind control things on the pigs. It was kind of horrific to watch because, you know, what else can we add to the stupidity of this movie? Animal cruelty, even though like obviously no pigs were harmed in the making of this movie, but still.
So essentially what she does is that she has mind controlled these pigs to do whatever the heck she wants. So she brings one pig into the home where they're all sitting down having dinner.
And she tells it to stop breathing. So essentially, we get this scene where all these characters are slowly watching this pig die to kind of prove the point that mind control's a thing. Like, we haven't talked about it like 20 times already throughout this movie.
Right, and seen it full on display,
We
but
needed to slowly watch a pig die. Like,
well, he
okay.
doesn't die, but still, yeah.
Yeah, they managed to rescue the pig 10 seconds before she turns it back on so that he starts to breathe and then he leaves the room again. And this is just to kind of point out how horrific this mind control aspect is. And that scene kind of just like goes nowhere because we already know that it's horrific because he's been using it to mind control half the other people, all the
Yeah.
Black Widows. So, but honestly, that dinner scene where they're sitting down arguing with each other and they tell Natasha to stop slouching is
Yeah.
like some of the best stuff.
It's very much like you can tell that they bought into the fabrication to some extent, but there's a scene where, like, I think Yelena asks Melina, like, did you ever think, like, where did you think I was? And she's like, oh, well, I hoped you got out. I'm like, Melina, we're basically like Dreykov's right hand, considering you're building all of this like technology or whatever it is that she's doing, conducting experiments on pigs. Like, you really didn't, like, you had no idea what they did in the, like, I guess she was one of the original widows, which, like, when the Red Room was created at this point is like, was this is an amazing question that we will never find out
Like,
about.
again, if you go back all the way to Agent Carter, it's been around since before the 40s, so God knows how long this
Which
thing has been
also
around.
doesn't make any sense.
Look, it's okay. As far as we know, maybe the old Romanov royal family was running this Red Room. Like, who knows? We will never find out because the MCU will never care.
There's also another scene that is completely pointless, which is when Malina is talking to Nat. She tells Natasha that, like, oh, your mom didn't abandon you in a trash can like you think. Your actual mom was like really like after you, and she like was really relentless and she wouldn't give up. And I was like, oh, this is really, and then she's like, oh yeah, and she's dead. I'm like, okay, so this scene is important because it doesn't serve any
This
purpose.
is also the only time we've ever seen Natasha care about her mother.
Which like is understandable considering she thought her mother abandoned her, but it also like it doesn't change anything about Natasha to us or to herself. Nor does it, like, if her mother was still alive somewhere, then, like, well, considering this was technically released after Natasha was already dead.
Yeah, so any like side plot or plot thing they were going to do with Natasha is pointless anyway, because we all know that she's dead by this point in the main canon. Like, we essentially got a prequel for a character who we know is already going to die. So any character development they do is fruitless on her end. So it should all be so it's mostly focused on Yelena, and Yelena has this well. Natasha's having this conversation with the fake mom. Yelena's having a conversation with the
Well,
fake
Yelena
dad.
doesn't want to have a conversation. Alexei's just like, I'm going to give dad advice now.
Yes, and he does it kind of poorly because he pretty much does everything poorly, but it's amazing. And then they get the cutest scene ever because Yelena growing up really loved the song American Pie, which if you haven't, give it a listen. It's like a 7 minute long song, but it's amazing.
It's a
And
classic American staple, in case y'all
yeah.
didn't know.
And Alexei starts singing it to her to kind of like, this was important for me too. And it was super, super cute. And then, of course, all the Black Widows in the Red Room show up.
Yeah, pretty much. But there's a line right before that where they have this sweet bonding moment. Alexei tries to like give a fatherly advice, and Yelena says something like, "Yeah, this is enough talking about your glory days as the Crimson Dynamo." That was the other reference.
Yeah.
The Crimson Dynamo was actually, I take it back. I said it was a Wolverine villain. He's actually an Iron Man villain, who was also an armored powered Soviet agent, which I think part of Mickey Rourke's character in the movie was loosely based off Crimson Dynamo, maybe question mark, but because Marvel likes to take two different things and blend them together and think that's a good idea.
Honestly, it might have been. But like, not to dig up old history on that one, it would have made sense if that was the case. or if they talked about him at all, like, or any of that, because his dad was also part of the Soviet Union.
Basically, like, we don't know anything about the Soviet side of things, and we still don't, because anyway. So yeah, the Red Room agents arrive, they tranquilize everybody, because Mama, you know, spilled the beans. We find out later that this was obviously planned between Natasha and Malina to get into the Red Room and do all of that and stop Dreykov.
Because this is an action movie, not a spy thriller.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of spy elements here. The first being that Yelena and Malina switch places, which harkens back...
Natasha.
Yeah, Natasha and Malina switch places, using the technology that Nat used in Winter Soldier.
You know, they finally brought that back after it being dead for so long. Like, how many movies would that have actually come in handy if they used it at all? But we're going to ignore that. And yes, that is some good spy shit that we get for 5 seconds.
Oh, there's also, speaking of accents, so Rachel Weisz is a phenomenal actress. She's, I believe, she speaks French, but I believe she's Jewish, but she's an English actress, if I remember correctly. And so it's kind of, there's a scene. So she's basically a British person trying to do an American accent that is being done by a Russian speaking person. So it's like two accents in one. That's pretty difficult to do. So there's a scene where she says something, I don't remember the line, but her accent completely disappears. So I don't begrudge her for that, but I thought it was an interesting note, because David Harbour's, in certain cases, his accent also disappears. Either that, or it's just because his voice is very gruff, is just very, a little bit more subtle in certain places, as opposed to just lost. So I have a note here. It says, oh, floating sky base, how original.
Yeah, you know, because we've never seen one of those before.
Yeah. So Malina, which is actually Natasha, goes to see Dreykov, and she's afraid of him. We find out that Dreykov is a paranoid little, like, he's basically like, what are those people that can't get a date that live in the basement?
Oh.
Incels.
Yeah, pretty
he's
much.
He's basically an incel. Because he, like, wears pheromones so that the women around him are afraid of him.
Yeah, and that's not even the first time we've gotten that in the MCU either. Jessica Jones.
Yeah, because here it's different. It's not pheromones, it's cologne. That makes it totally different. Yeah, so I still find it really bizarre that one guy's in charge and, like, the Russian government has no idea. I'm like, where's, like, the money for this?
How SHIELD not notice there's a floating base in the sky? Like,
what SHIELD?
Oh, you're right, fine. Like, but this has been going on for years. So even when SHIELD was a thing, how did HYDRA not figure it out either?
I find it hilarious that HYDRA thought it was, like, the shit. Mm. And it got defeated by 3 dropped helicarriers and 1 Russian spy agent stealing from them. Were the Starks the only people HYDRA actually managed to assassinate?
Yes, I honestly think that's my headcanon now. Like, HYDRA was just really bad at what it was trying to do. Like, because honestly, there's nothing in the MCU other than assassinating Howard Stark that they actually succeeded at.
Kudos, though, because they bring Malina, disguised as Natasha, and Alexei into, like, I guess, prison cells that look way better than anything you could have imagined in a gulag. Like, there's, like, a bed, and there's, like cabinets for books and everything. I was like, wow, this is a pretty nice prison cell. It's small, but it's, like, really, really nice. So I guess Alexei tries to, like, apologize, only to find out that that Natasha's not Natasha. And where is Yelena in all of this?
So she's strapped to a surgery table, about to have her brain taken out, because that is something we needed, because they want to experiment and see why she's now resistant to the freaking drugs. Wait. And mind control drugs.
Oh, I guess so they can build an immunity to the drugs. But I guess they had to have known about the drugs, because they sent Yelena and the other widow after this other former widow.
Which, how did the former widow break the mind control?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's not relevant to the plot, really. Assuming she was mind controlled, it wasn't like Natasha.
Yeah, because actually, when Right, because when did they actually start the mind control program?
After Natasha, because Dracov didn't want another defector.
Okay, that makes sense, I guess.
So then, in all of this, oh, we forgot to talk about all of the... We finally get an explanation of what happened in Budapest between Hawkeye and Nat, which is to say that they first hit out in... So they blew up the house, allegedly, with Dracov and Dracov's daughter. And they hit out in, like, a... what was it? It was the, like, what do you call them? Vents. Thank you.
Yeah, they hide out in the subway vents for 3 days playing tic-tac-toe. And I'm like, this is the most disappointing, like, answer to this question that nobody, like, people have asked. I wasn't one of them.
But... I wasn't either. We didn't care. I liked the mystery of it, like, but I could see the parallels a little bit. And they hid out in the bunker, in the safe house later.
Like, there's nothing they couldn't, like, the problem with this and trying to answer this question is that nothing could have answered the hype of what could have happened in Budapest.
I actually kind of like the fact that it was so mundane, honestly. Well, not to say that, you know, blowing up an alleged, you know, murderer and his daughter's collateral damage wasn't epic, but we're still not clear on the details and how things happened. And
well, no, because honestly that scene makes no sense either, because you've seen Natasha blowing up the building from inside of the car. Clint Barton is somewhere else completely. We don't actually know where he is. So the two of them must have had to meet up and decide to go in the hide in the subway system, but none of that makes any sense. But we now finally know what happened.
I guess.
And we solved the greatest mystery of all.
So and then, of course, Dracov, because this is a man who loves to talk about himself, shocker, reveals to the surprise of absolutely no one by this point that, shocker, Taskmaster was actually his daughter.
Yay! So surprising. Woo!
Here's the thing. If they had mentioned Dracov and his daughter, Dracov's daughter, once, it could have been a nice twist. But in fact, like, we are constantly reminded about the fact that Nat thought she killed Dracov. And obviously that means Dracov is alive and that the daughter was collateral damage. It's brought up so many times that at that point, like, it's, like I said, it's not even foreshadowing. It's just like telling us what's going to happen. And it's like, I wish it was a little bit more subtle.
Yeah, so essentially he saved his daughter by implanting a chip in the back of her neck, and now she can mimic anybody and everything. But the only people she really ends up mimicking is, like, Clint Barton, Captain America, and Black Widow herself.
Well, you can't really mimic Thor without a hammer, and for Tony can't fight to save his life unless he has a suit, so...
I mean, yeah, but in reality, it's like, you fight, like, all your friends, and I'm like, yeah, okay. You fight, like, the three human guys.
Yeah, really, though.
Unless Thor's not her friend. Which, honestly, I don't think they've ever had a scene of dialogue, just the two of them. So that might actually be the case.
Yeah. And also, Banner doesn't really fight. The Hulk fights, but you can't really... There's nothing to mimic. But anyway. So, let's see, where are we?
So, they introduce Taskmaster. And then Taskmaster goes off and fights... Yelena, I think, or...
No, Melina and Alexei.
Right. So they go off to fight that. Melina is working on bringing the entire air base down. So Alexei's job is basically to distract Taskmaster while Natasha figures out, like, the entire spy network, because honestly, Dracov just flat out tells her.
Well, here's the thing. That was all part of the mission that Nat and Melina came up with. Everybody had their own job, and Yelena's job was to wake the other widows. And so Nat's job essentially is twofer. Yeah, she needs to stop Dracov, but she also needs to keep him distracted. And Nat is a great distraction. I mean, I did like the fact that at the end, he's like, yeah, well, there's nothing you can do about blah, blah, blah. He, like, says some line, and she goes, thank you for your cooperation. And that was a nice reference back to when she interrogated Loki in Avengers.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a very, very good callback. All, like, if you remember that line in the original Avengers movie, I think she actually says it twice. Like, once when she's being interrogated it by the mob when we first get her introduction in that movie, and the second while she's interrogating Loki, and then
so in the scene where she's being interrogated, I don't think she says that. She literally she gets a call, remember?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, it's Coulson. He's like, put the woman on the phone. It's like, what? So like, I have like a, you know, sniper trained on you. Put the woman on the phone. And she goes, Coulson, I'm working. This moron's giving me everything.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's a good hearkening back, and it's very subtle to the point where like, I was like, oh, wait a minute. It took me a second.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If a lot of these little subtleties involved the plot and the action and the story, it would have been so much better.
So essentially what happens is that once she figures out like Dracov's big plan, how he controls all the Black Widows from around the globe, which is essentially a ring that he wears on a console in his desk, she breaks her own nose and proceeds to beat the crap out of him.
Yep. Because Melina had told her about the pheromones, and she really prepped her well about everything. Yeah.
So, meanwhile, Melina has tried to hack into the system, failed to do so. So now she goes off and blows up one of the engines keeping this thing up. So now it's starting to come crashing down. Natasha beating up...
Wait. So there's a point where the Widows arrive.
Yes.
And Dracov gets... Or Dracov calls in the Widows or something, and they arrive, and Nat's literally about to die, and I'm like, she's not gonna die. The pheromones are gonna save her in like 2 seconds.
That is also the best fight scene in the entire movie by far.
It was really well done. I also liked the fight scene between Yelena and Natasha earlier in the movie. I thought that was also really fun.
I think that's to kind of just to prove that they're both on equal footing, but I honestly like the cinematography of this scene. So good. Like the lighting was on point when the pheromone, because the pheromone's bright red,
or not the pheromone, sorry, the smoke,
yeah,
the cure to the brainwashing,
yeah, breaks open, and you just see this red, and it rains down on all the Widows, and it breaks the brainwashing. It's like, it was really, really good and really, really well done. And then the movie goes into schlocky action for the rest of it.
Yeah, pretty much. And then all this whole thing with the totally not helicarrier falling and everybody somehow surviving is like a little, like the Widows that are like cured, it makes sense because they actually take a vehicle.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is just so silly.
So,
it's just like debris falling,
yeah,
and people jumping on the debris, and I'm like, this is ridiculous.
So yeah, because the parents end up surviving because they get their own airship and they end up crashing into the ground and surviving that way. Fine, whatever.
I have a note that says so much falling.
Yeah, Yelena ends up actually being the one to kill Dracov by blowing up his own airship, so you actually see him consumed by fire. And then she ends up getting launched off the side. Natasha ends up following her and giving her a parachute. And they were supposed to fall together. But then, guess what? Taskmaster's still alive and still after Natasha.
Well, I think what happens is that Alexei manages to shut Taskmaster inside the prison cell. And then Nat lets her go. And she's like, I know you're going to come after me, but I'm going to let you go anyway. And then, of course, Taskmaster does what Taskmaster was going to do. And it's like... I guess thank you for rescuing her this time,
and then they end up like living by Natasha using all the falling debris to cushion her landing and fighting with Taskmaster in the air, so they also end up surviving on the ground somehow. And then Natasha ends up winning the fight against Taskmaster, breaking off the mind control.
Yep.
And honestly, then she kind of just like falls apart on the ground.
Yep, and then her and Yelena reunite again, and Nat's Russian is terrible. And then, you know, Alexei and Melina are there, and they're also fine. And then, of course, Ross shows up, because Ross showed up at the beginning when Nat was on the run for things she did in Germany, and they had called Ross to sort of be there when shit went down. We don't see Ross again, I don't think. But that's not really the point.
That scene actually kind of makes me angry, right? So what happens is that Ross and his cavalry show up. Natasha tells everybody to go away. She'll handle it. And then the very next scene, She's somewhere else completely. Like, we don't see how she handles it. We don't know how she escapes. We don't know anything. All of a sudden, she's off facing Ross and his cavalry of people. And then next thing we know, she's somewhere else completely.
So in the next scene, she meets again with Mason, who gets her a Quinjet, or the equivalent of a Quinjet, so that she can go get Steve and Bucky and I guess go rescue everybody else from the raft.
So that actually leads to a freaking good question, right? Like, what's the timeline of all of this, right? Because if you remember Civil War, Steve goes off to the Russian base to go, like, make sure that none of the other Winter Soldiers wakes up. They have that big fight with Iron Man. And then he goes, hooks up with Black Panther, who's like, hey, they're all being held at prison here. Does he wait 2 weeks to free everybody?
I think he has to, because at the end, don't forget, at the end of the fight with Tony, Bucky and Steve are both pretty beat up. And the after, and then we also, and then, so they needed at least a recovery time to heal. That could have been a couple of days, right?
Yeah, because they're both super soldiers. So. Right. So, but, like, do they leave, like, all their friends, like, locked up in jail for 2 weeks?
Not like they have a choice. And, like, and so I'm guess, and then, so they rescue everybody, or Nat shows up, they rescue everybody, and then they take Bucky to Wakanda. But the events of Black Widow also only really take on maybe 2 or 3 days.
So, like, I guess, right, because there's, like, no real timeline to any of this, because you actually have no idea how much time passes in this movie. If you,
well, you know a little bit. I think it's 2 days. Oh my god, no, it's 3 days, because we have Nat in Norway in the at night, where Taskmaster attacks her. Mm-hmm. Then we have Nat and Yelena at night in Budapest,
yeah,
in Hungary. And then we have the sunrise, or excuse me, sunset, when they get to Melina's, and everything at everything in the Red Room takes place overnight. So it's that, 3 nights.
So this is like super nitpicky nonsense, which I hope you're all super into. But like, I'm just now thinking, what's the travel time between Norway and Budapest? What's the travel time between Budapest and wherever the heck the prison was in Russia? Like, how long is it taking them to get all these places? And meanwhile, is everybody just rotting in jail this entire time? Or, like, they in jail for a month?
Well, we know they were in prison for at least a few days, right? Because remember, who was it? Like, right after everything happens, Tony shows up to the raft and Sam gives him, you know, tears him a new one.
Yeah.
And Clint is a jerk to him, and then you see Wanda. So, like, it makes sense that it would at least be a couple of days, because processing time, by the time Tony gets to handling everything in Germany, by the time Tony gets to the raft, by the time the fight with the Winter Soldier. So I'd say, yeah, maybe 3-4 days they were in prison.
And, but if we, like, look at it, there's a 2-week time frame between when Black Widow apparently escapes Ross somehow and actually getting the Quinjet, because the supplier, Mason, says, like, see what you can get. See what I can do with time, and I'm like,
right, okay. We don't know time. Time is an illusion.
I just feel bad for Wanda this entire time, because she's got the worst of it in prison if she's been there for like a couple of weeks.
And then people wonder why she turned to the dark side so easily.
I'm like, I'm not. This is not surprising at all.
But this is not that conversation.
No, that's another conversation to happen in the future. So
a couple things is, by the time the last scene with Nat in waiting for Ross, and the not yet after credit scene with Mason, Nat dyes her hair blonde, and we see that she's actually adapted her clothing a little bit to kind of match Yelena's, which I thought was a nice nod to like her accepting her as her sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then the after credit, and then as she's getting into the Quinjet, we actually hear the Avengers theme song playing, just I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah.
So then we get to the after credit scene, which is Valentina, blah, 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 5,000 names. She's visiting Yelena. She basically confronts Yelena sort of at the unmarked, like, which is essentially Natasha's grave, but you can't have a grave because your body's still on, what was it? What's the planet?
Oh,
Vormir?
Yeah.
Was it Vormir?
I think so.
So anyway, I guess we find out that Yelena joined up with Valentina. So her and US agent must be BFFs. But she is given, Valentina gives her a job.
Yeah, essentially this is what leads straight into Hawkeye, because Valentina gives her the job to basically go kill Clint Barton.
Which, like, yeah, it's not just the job to kill Clint Barton, though. She specifically tells Yelena that this is the person responsible for her sister's death.
And technically, she's not wrong.
Technically, here's my question. How the heck does Valentina know?
Who knows?
Because, like, the Avengers know that Natasha died, but, like, did they broadcast and explain that, like did the whole plot did of Clint everything?
Barton actually just sit down and tell them?
I don't know. It's, I don't know. There's a lot of things with this movie that don't make any sense.
Like, can you imagine, like, that conversation? And it's like, yeah, and then this guy with a red face told us all these things. Like, I still want the scene of Captain America meeting the Red Skull on Vormir.
Yeah, good luck with that.
It's never happening.
There's a lot of things that I will never get in the MCU, and I'm begrudgingly accepting that. Mm-hmm. So on that note, we've come to the end of the movie. And how would you rate this movie? If this was a class and we were going to give this movie a grade, what would we give this movie?
It's a C. It's an average movie. It's not bad. It's not Thor 2. It's definitely not the Eternals, which is just its own brand that we're going to get to eventually. It's a movie.
It's hard for me because there's a lot of good elements, right? A lot of potential that this movie like almost couldn't realize because it was trying so hard to be a superhero movie, which like I don't think anybody who understands Black Widow as a character was like, yeah, let's just make her a superhero who's like invulnerable because that tracks. And you can have the vulnerability element to it, right? Because she has one in the comics.
Yeah.
But you have to explain to your audience.
Yeah, and this just goes back into, I wish this was way more of a spy thriller than it was.
Literally, the title of this episode is, this really should have been a spy thriller.
Like, if it was, if they played Natasha, like, she was kind of played, and they did it more with a Winter Soldier vibe, I think this would have been a much better movie
than it was. For sure.
To this end, it felt like a generic action movie that we have seen 200,000 times. The plot twist came off from a mile away. Some of the character beats were fantastic. The humor was on and off again. And overall, the plot just wasn't there.
But I think at the end of the point to all this is this movie set out really what it aimed to do, which was not make a Black Widow movie, but was introduce Yelena and introduce the Red Guardian and introduce Valentina, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So in that aspect of it, to tie it into these other things, and I just remember everybody talking about how like this movie was like really was important. Like there was a debate about whether you should watch Black Widow first or Captain America the Winter Soldier, or excuse me, Falcon and Winter Soldier. Captain America, Winter Soldier 2, basically.
Essentially.
Sam is Captain America, so technically it is Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But to say that, like, I thought it was fine that I watched, that we all saw Falcon first and then saw Valentina doesn't, like, I think her introduction makes more sense in Falcon and Winter Soldier than it does here. But
to be fair, her best entire role is actually in Black Panther 2, but again,
that's true. But yeah. We're so far away from that.
We're far, far, far away from talking about that movie.
We haven't even gotten to Moon Knight yet.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun.
For some of us.
Yeah.
So on that note, we want to thank you guys so much for listening. And Caitlin is not on social media. She is the woman behind the microphone as she laughs here sitting next to me. What I will say is you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe, Billy Kaplan. You can also go back and listen to all of the pre-Caitlin episodes. We're calling that the pre-Caitlin era over on txhthockey.com. And you can look up Nerdy Notions. And then, of course, you can find us on the podcast itself on Spotify and YouTube and wherever else we can toss it into and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Is there anything I'm forgetting?
Honestly, no, I don't believe so. So
on that note, thank you so much for listening and putting up with us butchering this movie, which was not that hard, let's be honest.
No.
And check us out next time as we tackle the continuation of Yelena's saga in Hawkeye.